हरिः ॐ सहनौ सहनौ भुनक्थु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे. So now we've had that Mayas has finished building the hall. Yudhishthira Maharaj with the Brahmins on an auspicious time has done the opening ceremony and fed the Brahmins, given in charity, thousands and thousands of them. And then now then all the great rishis, Vyasadeva, Maitreya, Parvati, Markandeya, Jaimini, Bhrigu, and hundreds of others, Devalas there, that they, all these great sages, they're all there in the assembly. And that is so then they deal nicely with it. Then the Chitrasena, the Gandharva leader, with the Apsaras, they're doing singing and dancing like this. And all these different things are going. So then suddenly the Pandava son Narada Rishi appear by his mystical power, dressed in a black deerskin with his golden hair knotted on top of his head. He seemed like a brilliant sun rising in the hall. Yudhishthira and his brothers immediately stood in respect. They bowed low to Narada, who was accompanied by Parijata, Raivata, and Sumukha, three other powerful sages. Yudhishthira offered all the rishis seats, and they sat peacefully as the Pandavas worshipped them with sacred offerings, as well as with precious gems and jewels. Gratified, the sages were joyous to behold the wonderful assembly hall. Because, these are sages that move throughout the whole universe. And they've seen halls. They've seen everybody's halls. Brahma's halls and Indra's halls and, Yamaraj and Kuvera and everybody. So then they see this and they see, yes, this is very nicely done, very specially done. And why? Because why is everyone there? Because Krishna ordered it. It's being built by Maya Dhanava for the Pandavas who are great devotees. And Arjuna and Krishna then, known to the demigods as Narayan Rishi, and so, it's a big thing, so they're quite interested and happy. Narada said, O king, is your wealth being spent properly for protecting the people? So he's asking these questions, but you see is that this whole group of questions that he asks, and that they're all technically instructions. Right? Means if he's doing it, means there was a train, but if not, then these are instructions. So is the wealth being used properly for protecting the people? Because a king's duty, its only duty is to protect the people. So therefore the taxes are collected, duties, these different taxes, duties, and tariffs. These things are collected by the government. And also, what would be the thing for a punishment? Someone does something wrong, there's also a payment. So in these ways the government collects money. So now he's asking, is it being used to run the kingdom properly so that the people are protected? Right? He has to maintain, the armies, this whole administrative and bureaucratic structure, all these different things and all the good works they're doing, maintaining the roads, all this, but is it being done? Are the people benefiting? That's his whole point. Is your mind fixed in virtue? Because otherwise the mind could be fixed, like you see Duryodhana, just on politics, no virtue. Are you enjoying the pleasures of life? So means, are you protecting the people and doing it? Are you comfortable? Are you happy? Are you, enjoying the pleasures of life? Because someone may say, well, why should he enjoy the pleasures of life? But the point is, if he's not relaxed and comfortable, how is he going to focus on fine details of protecting the people? Because there's going to be so many anxieties coming up in management, in all these things. So he also has to be able to relax and enjoy himself, be with the family, and, take prasad nicely and be able to dress nicely. Just the mind relaxes and all that. He can spend time with friends. But it doesn't mean he's doing that at the expense of his duties towards the state. It just means that if he's not relaxed, like Krishna says in the Gita, you have to balance your work and recreation. So he's asked, is your work going nicely? You know, are you properly fixed? Is your recreation going nicely? I trust you do not sacrifice religion for the sake of profit, nor profit for the sake of religion, nor indeed both religion and profit for the sake of pleasure, which easily tempts men. So you have dharma, artha, and kama. So you're not sacrificing dharma for artha, so religion for profit, means you're not giving up rules of religion to get profit. At the same time as you're not giving up any profit because of religion. Means something that you should make, but for religious you're giving it up. No, it should be there, because if he doesn't get the results of his work, how does he run his occupation? How does he run the kingdom? Nor giving up religion and profit for sense gratification. Right? Because sense gratification means it has to be according to religious principles and not against what's profitable. So we see is that, let's say, like you had one element that added, like the French Revolution, is that Louis XVI, then he wasn't such a powerful king. He wasn't so trained in all that like Louis XIV. He was a very good statesman. And his wife, Marie Antoinette, she had a proclivity towards parties. And so if everything's going nicely and everything's going well and everything, then you have a party, then fine, you're the king, you know, why not? But she was having parties at the expense of, they were running out of funds. She would just constantly have parties. So then the problem is they weren't using the money properly to protect the people. And for the sake of pleasure, they had given up religion and profit. And you see then the people revolted, and there's a whole point. So these things are very specific. Nara continued to question Yudhishthira on a variety of subjects, his questions effectively constituting a number of instructions in the art of kingship. Right, so he's asking about, how he's taking care. Is he going out and checking? Is he checking his, the military, the army? Is he checking his horses? Is he checking his treasury? Is he checking all these things? Otherwise, if you just sit there and listen to others, you don't know what's there. They could tell you, yeah, we have so much wealth, but they're taking it all. Or, yeah, the horses are great, but there aren't any. Or, you know, like this. So you have to go out and see yourself. So all these different things he's pointing out. Yudhishthira sat with folded palms and listened attentively. The entire assembly remained silent as Narada, the foremost of the rishis, spoke. His knowledge and wisdom were famed throughout the universe. Narada was fully acquainted with every aspect of the Vedic teachings, and he was renowned as a great devotee and servant of the Supreme Lord. Right? So, yeah, he knew the Lord's desire, and his movements and actions were always arranged to assist the divine plan. So, the whole Vedic system is just that you have ways in which you can regulate your life in connection with Krishna. So therefore, it should run nicely. It means the kingdom should run nicely, so there's rules that make it work. And if it's running nicely, then the people will be satisfied and they'll be protected. Then they can be easily Krishna conscious. So he knows all these aspects of the Vedic teachings, but he knows them all in context of Krishna, how to serve Krishna and in bhakti. That's then what makes Narad Muni special. Other sages may know so much detail of the scriptures, but Narad Muni knows those details in context of how it's serving Krishna. That's the uniqueness. The Pandavas were reverent as he instructed them. The whole aim of the monarch, Narad explained, was to keep his people on the path of progressive spiritual life, helping them advance towards life's ultimate goal of emancipation, while ensuring that they were protected and had all their material needs provided. Because the idea is that by dharma, artha, kama, that's in place, people, and the balance of that, people will be satisfied. Then they can actually appreciate giving up material attachment and leaving the material world. And then the idea being is that they should do that in connection with the Lord, so they should go back to Godhead. But if they're struggling for their material facilities, then sometimes we see they get overly attached. Well, if they put in their effort and things come, you know, as will be, you know, according to your nature and your what you deserve, then one will be satisfied. And then in that you can see the superiority of spiritual understanding, spiritual practice. So that's why then these one is seeing that all the needs are taken care of, at the same time is that they're focusing their ultimate goal on Krishna consciousness. As Narad finished his instructions, Yudhishthira thanked him and said, "Great sage, you have asked me if my study of scripture, my wealth, and my marriage are all successful." Right? Because the thing is, if he's not studying scripture, how does he know how to rule? If you're not following the Brahmins, how will he know what to do? You know, his wealth is in place, then how will he run the kingdom if he doesn't have wealth? So it means, here is he using it to protect the people? It means it has to be there in the first place. It has to come in. And his marriage, because if his marriage is peaceful and running nicely, then his focus can be on the kingdom. Otherwise, if his marriage is having problems, it'll disturb his service. Please tell me how I can succeed in these things. Narada, who had ended his speech with these three questions, replied, "Scriptural knowledge is successful when it results in humility and good conduct." Right. So you know someone is knowledgeable if he's humble and he behaves properly. So if someone's a great scholar, but he's very arrogant and he doesn't deal properly with people, he's actually not a scholar. He knows many facts, he has great memory and all these things, but he is actually technically not actually understood the scriptures, what they're for. So if someone by knowledge then becomes humble and he behaves properly, that's the symptom of education. Wealth is successful when it is both enjoyed and given away in charity. So you're giving in charity, you're also using it, and you know, things are going nice. If you just hoard it and don't spend it or don't give it away, then what is as good as not having it? You know, so whatever you have, then you should live comfortably according to your means and give in charity. Yes. And marriage is successful when the wife is enjoyed and bears offspring. So in other words, he's happy in her company, and from that being happy in her company, then we see that there are children. So the point is, why would he be happy in her company unless she's happy? So that indicates that unless he's behaving properly, she won't be happy. And if she's not happy, definitely he's not going to be happy. So unless he like it says before, he has scriptural knowledge, it results in humility and good conduct. Right? Wealth is successful when both enjoyed and given away in charity. So if he's following those two, then he can behave properly with his wife. In the etiquette, how he deals with her and how he converses with her and the moods and emotions and all that, then she will be happy. That means then he will be comfortable. So that's the meaning of enjoy the wife. It means he's happy in her company because she's happy in his. So the point is, it starts with him. You know, he is the husband. If he doesn't behave properly, she won't be happy. She's not happy, he won't be happy. And if neither of them are happy, generally there's no children. So children are generally the thing that is going nicely. Concluding his instructions, the Rishi said, "Be sure, great king, that you are always free of the five evils which assail men: excessive sleep, fear, anger, weakness of mind, and procrastination." Because these five, then from that, then you find nothing gets done. Excessive sleep, then too much time is lost there. It means how much sleep you need, you sleep that much. Don't sleep more, don't be lazy. Fear, because if there's fear, then I won't do something in that, because I won't do something I should do because I'm fearful. Like that, so you should have the proper knowledge, proper association, proper direction, so that one's freed from fear. Anger, then getting angry after frustration, is that then that comes up, it doesn't necessarily accomplish anything. You have to be level-headed, especially the king. He has to be that. Weakness of mind, so he gets overly overwhelmed by things and things like that. No, his mind must be strong. He must take shelter of his superiors and all that. And procrastination, something is supposed to be done, do it now, don't wait. If it's supposed to be done now, do it now, don't do it later. Because later, you're supposed to do other things. So that means less things get done. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So otherwise, then the kingdom won't run nicely. His life won't run nicely. So this is these five everybody should avoid. Yudhishthira again bowed to Narada and took hold of his feet, saying, "I shall surely do all that you have said. My knowledge has been increased by your wise words." Yudhishthira, because what he's explaining is not just knowledge, it's realization, it's understanding what it's for. So that wisdom, that then is increasing his knowledge. Because the point is, you don't know, then you know, and then you understand, then you realize. So it's brought it forward. It's brought Yudhishthira Maharaj's understanding forward. Yudhishthira replied in detail to all of Narada's questions. When he finished, the sage blessed him by saying, "That king who properly performs his duties will pass his days in happiness, and at the end of his life he surely ascends to the regions of heavenly happiness." Right? So that's, you know, that's just what will happen, but as devotees, then one goes back to Godhead. So here's that Narada Muni's ask all these questions, they're all instructions. And then he said that, you know, all these things, and then because he's asking this question, he says. And then he'll say, and what he says, then you can understand that he understands the instruction that's being given. And so that way, then you see is that the question is there that's making the point, and then his answer is such that how you apply the point. So between this, then you have the instructions of how, you know, leadership works, how especially administration works. But most of it, you can see, will apply to anyone. You know, it's just like the man can say he's the king of his castle. It means, in other words, his little apartment, he's king, right? So same things apply. Yudhishthira became curious to learn from Narada about the assembly halls possessed by the gods. Yeah, because he's been around. Now he's seen his assembly hall, and he was thinking, this is nice. So he wanted to know, well, what do the other gods have? He wondered if there would be any equal to the one Maya had built for him. But it's not out of pride. He's just wondering, because this is so amazing, because it was Krishna ordered it. So is there anything like it anywhere in the universe? In the presence of the many kings and sages in this hall, Yudhishthira asked, "O great Rishi, you can travel with the speed of the mind and go anywhere within the universe. Please tell me of all the assembly halls you have seen. Do any of them equal mine?" You know, in other words, by asking that question, it's not a matter of pride. It's a matter of you're showing their comparison to his. So you're taking his and showing this one has this aspect that, you know, that's better. This one has this unique one, or a lot of these. So then you don't have to explain the aspects that are already there in his. You explain what's unique that's beyond that. The Pandav asked Narada to describe in detail the other halls as well as who was to be found in them. Because then in a hall, then Indra in his hall, he'll have a certain associates that'll be there. His associate. Brahma will have certain associates like that. Who waited upon Indra in his hall and who upon Yamaraj? Which fortunate souls attended Brahma in his hall? Yudhishthira's inquiry was pointed. He wanted to know where his ancestors, the great kings of the past, had gone. So he's going to hear about everybody that's there, but it's also going to be prominent great kings from the past, because, you know, they've gone to the heavenly planet. So where are they? In whose court are they? He was especially eager to hear of his father, Pandu. Had Pandu attained the highest heaven? Yudhishthira waited expectantly for Narada's reply. So he wants to know where he is. Narada described the great halls belonging to all the principal gods, beginning with that of Indra. Indra's hall is 150 yojanas long, more than 1,000 miles, and 100 yojanas wide. Right, so that's 800 wide and 1,200 long, big. And it shines with the splendor of the sun. It is capable of dispelling grief, fatigue, fear, and weakness. So whoever's in that hall, they won't feel any of these qualities. Indra sits there in a magnificent ethereal form, adorned with a brilliant crown and bracelets, and wearing effulgent white robes. He is decorated with celestial garlands of many hues. By his side sits personified beauty, fame, and glory. Right, because that's as the king of heaven, and these are the prominent qualities that he is using. Narada named all the rishis and other personalities who wait upon the king of the god. Faith, intelligence, and learning are all present in this court, as are sacrifice, charity, religion, profit, and pleasure. Right? So then he'll deal with these there. So these are all these aspects personified. So charity personified, religion personified, profit, pleasure personified. But there was only one earthly king from the past, the royal sage Harish Chandra. Right? So the earthly kings must be in other courts. That. Narada went on to describe Yamaraj's hall. His hall is a full 100 yojanas square, right? Because Indra's was rectangular. So that proportion of 1 to 1.5, that's of rectangular, that's considered the best And that, and that's also this, the rectangle represents the Kshatriyas. So he being king of heaven, so it's a natural shape like this. Yamaraj is his square, like that. Square is generally for the Brahmins and that, but he's then the judge. He's judging everybody and how they're doing like that. And it is delightful in every way. No pain of any kind exists within that hall, and it contains every object of desire, both celestial and human. It could travel anywhere in the universe according to its owner's will. So Indra's hall is really big and, you know, very nice and like that, but it's situated in one place. But Yamaraj's, it actually can travel around the universe like that. Just wherever he resides is by his will. Just he wants to go here, then the whole thing goes there. Time and death personified sit on either side of Yamaraj, because that's how he's controlling things. And countless rishis surround him. Gandharvas and apsaras entertain the occupants of the hall with music and dance. The scent of divine perfumes fills the air. Narada named the personalities who wait upon Yamaraj, which included all the monarchs in Yudhishthira's line, ending with Pandu. Right, so that's because that's Pitri Loka. So they've all gone to Pitri Loka. So they haven't gone to Indra's, those heavenly planets, but they've gone to Pitri. So they're all very, very pious and all that. So they qualified to go to Pitri Loka. It's also connected with the moon, like that. Narada then described Varuna's hall and then that of Kubera, the lord of wealth. Both those halls were opulent beyond imagination, being filled with gold and gems and inhabited by numerous gods and rishis and their shining consorts. Narada told Yudhishthira about Brahma's hall. The actual form of that mystical hall cannot be ascertained, as it can assume various indescribable forms from moment to moment. Right, so the hall is made of celestial gems that constantly change hue, and it appears to be suspended in the firmament by its own power. The self-effulgent hall knows no deterioration, and it continuously increases the happiness of its occupants. So it's always changing and all that, always just how it looks and everything like that. You know, the colors are changing and all that. Brahma sits there surrounded by the personified forms of mind, space, knowledge, sound, touch, form, taste, scent, nature, all the elements, and the prime causes of the universe. Right, so you see is that because Brahma deals with the secondary creation, so all the aspects of the secondary creation, they're all there personified. While Indra's dealing with as the king, so then dharma, artha, kama, and all these different things are, you know, nobility and fame and beauty and wealth and like that. So he's dealing with that. Brahma's dealing on a much more subtle level, the metaphysical level. Yes. Present also are the sun, moon, and all the stars and constellations. Right, so the constellations, those are all the wives of the moon gods. So they're situated in, I think, not sure that they're not goodness of goodness. They're very high level. Brahma, his court, it's all on that level. Joy, renunciation, asceticism, understanding, patience, wisdom, forgiveness, fortune, and all the Vedas. Right, so the personified Vedas sit in his court. So you see it's a much, much more subtle, the association. Yudhishthira and his brothers sat in rapt attention as Narada spoke about all the immeasurable splendor and opulence of Brahma's hall. He named all the chief progenitors, right, because then all the Prajapatis will be there, the 21 Prajapatis, and all the principal gods and goddesses awaited upon Brahma. When Narada stopped speaking, Yudhishthira began to question him further. He wanted to know why only Harishchandra, out of all the great kings of the past, had attended to Indra's abode. He also wanted Narada to tell him about his meeting with Pandu. What did Pandu say to the sage? How was he faring now in Yamaraja's assembly? Narada explained that Harishchandra had reached Indra's planet because he had performed the great Rajasuya sacrifice. That sacrifice involved subjugating all other kings and distributing charity to hundreds of thousands of Brahmins. And it had set Harishchandra apart from the other kings. Narada then told Yudhishthira that Pandu had given him a message for his son. If Yudhishthira could also perform the Rajasuya, then both he and Pandu could reach Indra's kingdom. Pandu felt that his sons were now capable of performing such an incomparable sacrifice. If they were successful, then father and son would remain united in heaven. Both Narada and Pandu understood that the gods had their own purposes to fulfill through Yudhishthira's performance of the Rajasuya. It was part of a divine plan meant to free the world of demoniac influences. There were present many evil kings and kshatriyas inhabiting the earth. Before beginning the sacrifice, Yudhishthira would need to overpower them, right? Because otherwise they're coming up and creating problems. So you have to subdue all these ones that are going to actually, they're not, as Narada explained, properly taking care of the people. They're just interested in their power and everything like that. Like you see Duryodhana. And so they have to be all subdued, and then you bring, and then the planet will be properly peaceful because people will be taken care of. They'll be able to be God conscious. Only then would he be able to perform the Rajasuya, and only then would he be able to reestablish piety and virtue throughout the world. Narada looked around at the five brothers who sat humbly before him. He knew they were dear to Krishna, who wanted to use them as instruments to fulfill his own desire to reestablish religion upon the earth. Right, so Krishna comes, he performs these, but he doesn't do it alone, he does it with his associates. Narada concluded, therefore you should perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. The celestials have ordained it. I shall return when the sacrifice begins. Now I am going to Dwarka, for I desire to see Krishna, under whose will this entire universe is moving. Narada stood up to leave, and Yudhishthira requested him to ask Krishna to again visit Indraprastha. Narada agreed, and the Pandavas bowed before him and his companions. The rishis then disappeared into the sky by their mystic power. Right, so Narada and those rishis that came with him, then they just disappear. They just go up into the sky and just disappear. Just like he just appeared and then came. Like that. Okay, so then next then we'll hear about Yudhishthira is now contemplating about the Rajasuya sacrifice. And then, what's the next? Because I think that's the next. Preparing for that, because then they have to get rid, subdue the kings. So next we have Jarasandha. Like that. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai.